So I want to specifically acknowledge my Rosh Kola, Rabbi Mordechai Terchiner, who I have a schus of learning with on a regular basis, and also Rabbi Chaim Strauchler, Rabbi Mora D'Astra, who I also have the privilege of gaining from his tutelage in Shaar HaShemayim. So, if we had this situation where you're on the road and you had the choice, either you're programming your car this way or you yourself are beyond the wheel, and you can either veer off the road suddenly and escape, or you stay on the road and collide with a horrific obstacle. Who here is saving their own life? By a show of hands. Okay. Who here is not? Who here is staying on the road to avoid hurting anybody else? So, okay, that was that. So, if I could get a volunteer, would anyone like to explain why they would prioritize their own life? Yeah. What's your name?
Adina.
Adina, why are you prioritizing your own life?
Because Rabbi Akiva said that if you're in a desert and you only have one water bottle, then you should use it to save yourself.
Using the sources. Blaming on Rabbi Akiva. Okay, fine, fair. Why did Rabbi Akiva say that? Not sure. Okay, that's fair. Anybody have any ideas? Yes. Can't live with the guilt. So that's an emotional question.
And all the guilt of all the insurance.
Okay. Guilt of the insurance. That's fair. Financial as well. Okay. So I think that this question is really twofold. The first question is, do I have the right to prioritize my own life over the life of another? Do I have the right to say, well, it's my life and that's more important, even if it means that my decision will end the life of another person? But then there's a second question here, which is, even given that that's so, even given that you can prioritize your own life, but what about the nature of committing an evil act and the impact that has on your life? Is it more important to you to live? Or is it more important that you should never end a life, that you should never commit murder? Because even if my life's more important, but it's not more important to me that I live than to avoid committing murder, I can never live doing such a thing, just as you said. So if we take a look at the first source in Bava Metzia, which I was just quoted, so it's actually not so simple. Without looking at inside, we have an argument. We have a case where there are two people traveling in a desolate area, and they are starving, they are thirsty, and there's only one jug of water left. It is not sufficient to feed both of them. And the Gemara says, anybody?
Drink.
Is it the only opinion?
What if you should drink?
It's an argument. We have the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. It's the end of the Gemara. It says, your life precedes the life of your friend. But Ben Batura argued that no, that it is better that both of them drink rather than watch their friend die. What is Ben Batura thinking? Why does he say that? Any ideas?
Jewish guilt.
Jewish guilt of what? You're going to feel guilty. The emotions of it. Well, I think another way of saying it is, it's that your life is important, but to end the life of another person, you can't live with that. Alternatively, you could suggest that Ben Batura is indeed saying you have no right to prioritize your own life over someone else. You can't do that. And Rabbi Akiva says, no, your life comes first. Chayecha kol melechayechicha. That's okay. But then we reach source number three, and we have a problem. Why do we have a problem? Why is there a conflict? Any volunteers? What does source number three say? The person is threatened with death. The one who is threatening them says, either kill someone else or I will kill you. What is the halacha? Okay, you're getting to the answer already. Hold on. Let's get the question at least. Right, you have to let yourself be killed rather than kill the other person. Yeharig va'al yavor. It's one of the three cardinal sins. What about this idea that your life precedes the life of your friend? What about Rabbi Akiva? Why do I have to die rather than kill another person? So we have an answer.
In the first case, you're just not sharing your water with the other person. You're not actively killing them. You're just not helping them. In this case, you're actually actively killing them. So you can't actively kill somebody to save your own life, but you don't have to save their life at the expense of your own life.
Okay, so there's a distinction. Who says that? Which source suggests that? Anybody? Let's get somebody else. Is there anyone, any of these sources, which says that this idea that you cannot kill another person is only if you do it actively? Correct. Who said that? Source number 5, Tosfot, says that this idea that you have to give your life up rather than end the life of a friend is if you are performing an action. If you are being inactive, then you are not commanded to do so. I have a question. Why? If we are indeed saying your life is more important, then why does it matter whether or not you do an action? Action, no action. The person's dying. It's horrible. But my life comes first. That's what Rabbi Akiva said. Why should it make a difference if I do it actively or passively?
Well, in the case of the first one where you're wandering in the desert, there's a person who can make a miracle and save a guy, right? But in the act of me pulling the trigger to shoot somebody and kill them, that's like, that's the distinction, the difference, that when I'm actively doing the killing, there's no turning back. But when I'm just standing by, you know, Kodesh Baruch Hu can do anything because they have a person in their own.
Interesting. So I think what you're suggesting is that ultimately, it's not that your life precedes the life of another, it's that even if you make that decision to drink that water, who knows, maybe Kodesh Baruch Hu will take care of them. Okay, that's fair. Rabbi Akiva does indeed say, Chayecha komen l'chayecha vercha. He says your life comes first. So I'd like to suggest that it may depend on the following. If we frame this discussion in the lens of not just does your life come that before that of your friend, but can you ever commit to doing such an evil act, then maybe it makes sense. Because if we analyze this act in a vacuum, is the act that you're doing an evil act? Is what you are doing evil in this context? You could argue no. Although obviously you would never want to end the life of another, why are you doing it? To save yourself. That's not evil. I'm not intending to kill anybody else. I would never do such a thing. But I'm saving myself. Right? This is the general question of double effect. When I have an action that has a negative and positive result, how do we evaluate such an action? Right, the motivation behind what we do, the reason why we do things, is important. To give a simple yet comical example, this Friday, it was very close to Shabbos, and my daughter was napping, and she needed to take a bath. And I had no choice but to wake her up and get her into the bath and bathe her. Now, that doesn't sound too bad, does it? What if I told you, well, on Friday, I walked into a room, saw a toddler sleeping in a bed, grabbed them out of the bed, threw their clothes off of them, and threw them into some water. Sounds a lot different. Doesn't sound like the best thing to do. But if you understand why I did those exact physical actions, it's not so bad. So what you could argue is as follows. In the event that you are performing a physical action, you are doing it. You are the one pulling that trigger. Then, although you are doing it for a good purpose, ultimately the way to define your action is an act of murder. That is what you did. You murdered someone. Yes, you murdered someone to save yourself, but you murdered. In the context of saving myself, when I drink the flask of water, is it evil? I'm drinking water. Drinking water is a perfectly good act. But it happens to be, in this context, it is ending the life of another. Maybe then, in that context, we can evaluate your action based on your motivation and not the ultimate results. However, we still have a problem, because even with this idea of active versus passive, we have another source. That is Yerushalmi and Truma. What does Yerushalmi and Truma say? Any volunteers? Take a look at source number 6. Or 7, rather. No. Sorry, actually, excuse me, source number 4. Source number 4. What do Yerushalmi and Truma say? Source number 4. Right? a very unfortunate situation. There's a group of people traveling. They are met by a band of robbers and murderers. And they tell them, give me one of you or I will kill all of you. Then what does the Yerushalmi say? Give me one person. Can't do it. Can't do it. You can't give up a person. Rather, it's better that they all die and not give up a soul from the people of Israel. However, the situation changes when they specify the person they want. If they specify which of your group you want, they want you to give over, then all of a sudden things change. What is the halacha in that case? All right, some comical. Yeah, okay. It's a heavy topic. Humor is appreciated. Thank you. Depends if he's Jewish or not. I didn't see that in the Gemara. That's what happened on the record. What are the opinions listed in the Yerushalmi? So we have the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan, who says, give him up. You can give him up. Once they specify a particular person, you can give up that person. However, Rish Lakish says you can only do it if they are Chayav Misa Kesheva Ben Bichri, if that person already did something which warrants the death penalty. And it's a discussion in Rishonim what exactly that means. Does that mean the death penalty in Jewish courts, non-Jewish courts? But you can't always give someone up. But now I have a problem, because you said that you can do it if you're doing it actively. Is this active?
You don't actively kill them.
Right! You're not actively killing them. Hashem can still make a miracle. You're not pulling that trigger. Who knows what's going to happen? So why is this? Why is this not okay according to one opinion and okay according to others? So here, a few suggestions. We have the Maharam Chalava. Right? That's the way to pronounce his name. Maharam Moshe Chalava, he was a prominent commentator in the 13th century, in 14th century Barcelona, who suggests that here there's a practical concern, which is that while we talk about the morals and how horrific it is to do such an act, ultimately, in a situation in which either way, that person will die, and it's a question of them dying alone or them dying with many other people, then we do not say you cannot give up a life. And it goes back to this logic. Why is it that we don't give up the life of someone else to save ourselves? Said the Gemara, my chazis, the damati das sumukfei, who says your blood is redder? Well, says the Maharam Chalava, either way you're both going to die, that logic doesn't apply. Right? However, we still have the opinion of Rish Lakish, who seems to say, no, it is an exception that you can give up a person, even if both of you will die. You still can't give in to this horrific act. It is more important for you to avoid doing such an act than to survive, even if this way neither of you will survive. So that brings us to the Chazon Ish. And I'd like to, with the Chazon Ish, go back to our question. So if I have my decision, I am in the car, I'm programming my car, and I'm driving down the street, and I can either veer off the road and save myself and end the life of another, or I stay on their road and collide with a horrific obstacle. What do I do? Looking back at our analysis, do I have Tosfot? Can I say, well, I'm not being active? When I veer off the road, is that active or passive? It seems active. Seems active. I'm veering off the road. I would have gone straight. Instead, I am turning my car. The car is being directed to turn. I'm programming my car such that it veers off the road suddenly and ends this person's life. Doesn't seem like we can invoke Tosfot to save the passenger. Yes?
It is not the act of not doing something also an act in and of itself. The act of deciding to continue and not turn the wheel, that's a decision, that's an action. Not just turning the wheel.
The act of inaction is an action.
Correct.
I think on a moral level, possibly, but on a practical level, I think Tosfot is arguing that no, that we do distinguish between inaction and activity. It's different. It's not. It's the idea of being inactive is, look, I can't make a decision here, so I have to sit back and see what happens. I can't divert. Diverting would be immoral. So I would argue that Tosfot is not relevant. What about the Maharam Chalava? What about the Maharam Chalava? This idea that, well, if both of you are going to die anyway, then you can choose to end another's life and at least save yourself. Is that relevant here? Well, it would depend. Maybe the cases may be different. But in a particular case where it's either me or him, staying on the road will end my life. Veering off the road will end that person's life, his or her life. It's not true. I don't have the Maharam Chalava either, but maybe we do have the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish suggests, and I think again it relates to this question of how we define the act. The Chazon Ish says, if you take a look, source number 7. Chazon Ish says that maybe we can distinguish between different acts in terms of the nature of the act. The Chazon Ish was asked, and he proposed the question which was posed later as the trolley problem. You have an arrow, and it is being directed toward a lot of people, a multitude of people, and you had the chance to divert that arrow to only one person. Should you divert the arrow? And the Chazon Ish says, well, based on the Yerushalmi and Trumot, you cannot, because we do not prioritize the life of one or the life of many over the life of an individual. That is what Yerushalmi said. Even if all of them will be killed, they should be killed rather than give up the life of one person from the people of Israel. But the Chazon Ish says, well, maybe this case is different, and it depends on the inherent nature of the act. If what you are doing is inherently an evil act, giving up the life of a person to a number of murderers is evil. Even if you'll tell me I'm doing it to save everybody else, it is an evil act. Maybe that cannot be changed, co-opted by my intention. Maybe that is evil. We can never do that. But diverting an arrow from a number of people who are in his path, that is not an evil act. It's a wonderful act. It's an act of saving. It happens to be that in this particular circumstance, unfortunately, by diverting the arrow from many people, I will kill the life of another. And the Chazon Ish is not sure. He's not sure as to whether or not we can distinguish based on the inherent nature of the act. And so I think the same analysis may apply to this case. Is veering off the road, is veering off the road inherently a positive act or a negative act? You could argue, I'm not sure you have to, you could argue that what I am doing when I veer off the road is not evil. I am saving myself from an obstacle. Again, in the case in Sanhedrin, when I'm told to kill someone else to save myself, I am killing them intentionally. I intend to kill them. I intend to kill them to save myself, but I intend to kill them here when I veer off the road. I don't intend to kill anyone. If it happens, it's so very unfortunate. But the act itself, you could argue, maybe based on the Chazon Ish, you could argue the act itself is inherently a good, positive act. And so I think when we think about these things, the considerations, and I'm sure some arguments are more compelling to some people, maybe it resides with you, this feeling of guilt. Many people were mentioning the emotional guilt associated with killing another person. Maybe some people in the room would say that we have to be practical. No, save as many people as you can. Maybe some would say your responsibility is to yourself. But I think the very act of considering these questions raises the general possibility that we should always engage in, which is the importance of considering our values. That in life, we often have conflicts. You have ethical struggles. You have decisions that are not so simple. Should I go to this event or should I not? Should I devote my time to this proposition or should I not? It's not so simple. And in order to answer these questions, what we need to be very clear on is what are the values that are most important to us? What is most important to me? And when in my life am I willing to say, you know what? This value is important, but it's not as important as this one. It's at this point where I draw a red line. I will never do such an act, even if it would have meant having a great time. I will not commit such an act, even if it would have made me more popular. Because I have values. And I draw the red line at this point. If you look at the Messiah Yisharim I brought for you in source number 8, Messiah Yisharim says that a person should constantly be making two calculations. Generally, what is the purpose of my life? What is the true way to serve God? What are my most important values? And secondly, specifically, are my activities living up to those values? Do the decisions that I make on a daily basis, are they consistent with the things that I think are most important? And it's worthwhile for me, for you, for all of us to take a minute, maybe once a week, maybe once a day before we go to sleep and think, what are the things that are most important to me? And is my life consistent with those things? And hopefully in that vein, we can live a life we never should know from such horrific decisions. But every one of our decisions should be decisions based on values. And then we can know that no matter which decision we make, we are living a life of values and a life of Avodah Hashem. Thank you very much for your time. Thank you very much, Lo Pana, for hosting, to be an Aliyah, for Tavori, for all the sponsors.
Thank you. Thank you, Rabbi Bergman. I want to just mention, by conclusion, that it really is a special treat here at Olpana that when we have a father-daughter learning program.